I'm really excited about the new Credo course for the Book of Revelation. The Book of Revelation is a book that it seems like everyone's interested in, and especially in these times in which we live now. It seems like even in secular society, people have this sense that the world's getting near closing time. I was reading a book not long ago that talked about how years ago, whenever people made movies and had visions of the future, it was always a great utopia. You know, always how the world was going to get better and things were going to be wonderful and we're going to enter into this great age of utopia. But now it's fascinating. Whenever people make movies or documentaries or things about the future, it's always apocalyptic. And so people in the world seem to have this collective sense that things are about to end. And so I think the Book of Revelation is a book for our time. It's a book for our time, really unlike any other time. And what I want to do as we go through the Book of Revelation together is give a lot of the background here at the beginning. The Book of Revelation is one of these books we need to kind of understand the background of it and the context of it before we get into the book itself. And then as we get into the book, what I want to do is cover a lot of the main issues. We won't have an opportunity in this study to cover every single point in the book, but kind of give the overview, a synthetic view of the book, and then focus in on a lot of the problem areas, the problem passages, the different places in the book where there's different views. And I'll try to give some of the different views at these points and then try to give the reason that I hold the view that I hold. And so I pray this will be an enlightening study. It'll be a study that will really help us understand the world in which we live and ultimately have a greater view of God. Now, before we get started in what I call Apocalypse Now, the Book of Revelation, I thought I'd give a little test here for us to take. These are the top 10 ways to know if you're obsessed with Bible prophecy. I take this test here with me. Now, number 10 is you use the Left Behind books as devotional reading. Number 9, you get goosebumps when you hear a trumpet. Number 8, you believe the term church fathers refers to Hal Lindsey and Tim LaHaye. Number 7, you believe there's an original Greek and Hebrew text with Schofield's notes. Number 6, you can name more signs of the times than you can commandments. Number 5, you refuse a tax refund check because the amount comes to $666. Number 4, barcode scanners make you nervous. Number 3, you talk your church into adapting the 60s pop song Up, Up and Away as a Christian hymn. Number 2, you never buy green bananas. And number 1, you always leave the top down in your convertible in case the rapture happens. Well, I always like to say I'm not obsessed with Bible prophecy, but I love to study Bible prophecy. And the reason is when I was in my early 20s, I was reading through the Bible every year, and I would get to these certain parts of the Bible, and I had no idea what it was talking about. And I came to see that the missing link, really, or the missing part of my understanding of the Bible was prophecy. So I began to study prophecy not because I wanted to be a prophecy expert, but because I loved the Bible and I wanted to understand the Bible. Almost 30% of the Bible was prophetic at the time it was written. So to me, if we love the Bible, we love prophecy. And prophecy puts the Bible together for us. There's an old saying about a pastor, and one of his parishioners said he was the best man he'd ever seen at taking the Bible apart, but he could never put it back together again. And I think a lot of people are that way. They don't really know how to put the Bible together. And the Book of Revelation, as the capstone of God's message to us, really helps us put the Bible together. It puts all the threads together for us. So that's part of what I'm hoping to accomplish in this study. Now, I want to get into some introduction to the book to, before we get into the details, kind of lay a little bit of the background. And you'll notice if you have your Bible open, the title of this book is The Revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, there's two ways this title is commonly misstated. It's often called Revelations. In fact, I teach down at Dallas Seminary, and one of the things I always tell people when we study the book of Revelation is, the first thing is it's Revelation, not Revelations. Yet I still have students hand in papers all the time. They have the word Revelations in there. So this is the most basic thing. It's Revelation. It's singular. So it's not the book of the Revelations. It's Revelation. And it's often called the Revelation of St. John, or sometimes the Revelation of St. John the Divine. It's not the Revelation of John. It's the Revelation of Jesus Christ. So that's the most important thing maybe at the outset, is just to get the title of the book right, The Revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, the title Revelation of Jesus Christ can mean about Christ. It's a revelation about Him. In other words, He's the revealed one. Or it can mean a revelation from Christ. That is, He is the revealer. Either one of those would be possible in the Greek language as it's written there. The view that I take is that primarily this is a revelation from Christ. Now, surely it's about him. There are at least 35 names and titles of Jesus in this book. But if you go on, I think the rest of the verse kind of tells us that the primary meaning here is it's a revelation from Christ. Because notice it says the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show to his bondservants. So the emphasis here is not so much on Jesus as the revealed one, but Jesus as the revealer. So this is the revelation from Jesus Christ. Certainly it's about him as well, but it's a revelation from Jesus Christ. A little bit about the importance of this book, just to kind of get our feet wet here at the outset. The book of Revelation, of course, looks ahead. It's a prophecy. But the other thing about the book of Revelation, a lot of people don't realize, is it looks back. Someone has called the book of Revelation the Grand Central Station of the Bible, because it's where all the trains come in, of all the trains of thought from the rest of Scripture. There are about 278 allusions to the Old Testament in the 404 verses of the book of Revelation. In fact, some people find up to 550 total allusions to the Old Testament in Revelation. Now that's 550 allusions in 404 verses. So it's just packed with references and allusions back to the Old Testament. But what's interesting is there are no direct quotes from the Old Testament in the book of Revelation. But again, hundreds of allusions to it. Some other things about Revelation: it's the only prophetic book in the New Testament, the only prophetic book. It gives a proper view of history, this book does. It gives us the divine estimate of human history. It has the highest Christology, I believe, or doctrine of Jesus Christ in the entire New Testament. It has a very elaborate doctrine of Satan and the Antichrist, as we're going to see as we go through this study. A lot about Satan and demons in the book. And it predicts a final one-world urban system, a totalitarian worldwide urban empire that's going to exist on the earth. And of course, with all the globalism we see in our world today, we can see how even now the stage seems to be set for that. A little bit about the form of this book. What's the form of Revelation? Well, John calls the book an apocalypse. The word revelation there, the revelation of Jesus Christ, is the Greek word apokalypsis. So this is an apocalypse, which that word refers to an unveiling of truth related to the divine purpose. The word apokalypsis means to unveil or to take the cover off of something. And so this is an unveiling of truth related to God's divine purpose. The book is also called a prophecy. That is, it's a revelation of truth from God. It's called a prophecy in chapter 1, verse 3, and then in chapter 22 and verse 10. So the beginning and the end, kind of like bookends, it's called a prophecy. But the book is written in kind of an epistolary style. It's like an epistle. It has a prologue and has a benediction at the end. And it contains messages in chapters 2 and 3 that are like letters written to churches. So what I like to say is the book of Revelation is a prophecy in the form of an epistle that contains apocalyptic imagery. So I think that's the form of this book. It's a prophecy. It's written in the form of an epistle, but it contains apocalyptic imagery, as we'll see, like beasts and things like that. So that's the form of the book. Another thing that kind of helps us understand the book, or at least kind of just get an overview of it, are some of the key words that are used. The most used word in the book of Revelation by far is the word "and." It's the word "kai" in Greek, and it occurs 1,200 times in the book of Revelation. Now, there's 404 verses, and 271 of the 404 verses start with the word "kai" or the word "and." So as you read the book, it's called "kai meter." It's just "and, and, and." It just kind of takes you breathlessly through the book. So this is a book that just moves very quickly as you go through it. The word "great" or "megas" occurs 82 times. It's a great book. The number 7 occurs 54 times. The word "throne" or "thronos" in Greek, 46 of the 61 times in the New Testament. So it emphasizes God's authority. There are many of these words that are used, many other words, but those are a few of the key ones that kind of give us a flavor for the book. Now, the theme of this book, the way I see it, is you can divide the book kind of into three parts, and we'll look at this more later, but chapter 1 is about the Christ. It's the radiant, resurrected Christ who appears to John on the island of Patmos. Chapters 2 and 3 are about the church. There's seven letters of Jesus to seven churches. And chapters 4 through 22 are the consummation. And I think the central theme of the book in some ways is found in verse 7, where it says, "Behold, he's coming with the clouds. Every eye will see him, even those who pierced him, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn over him." So the theme of the book, in many ways, we could say, is the ultimate triumph of Jesus Christ, that Christ wins. So a story Vernon Grounds tells years ago about a time he was in a gymnasium over in the city of Denver when he served there at the seminary. And they would go over and play basketball at a gym nearby. And there was a janitor who would sit up there to wait to lock up the building. And he sat up there always reading his Bible. So Vernon Grounds went up one time and sat down next to him after they'd finished. And he asked him, he said, "What are you reading?" He says, "Well, I'm reading the Bible." He says, "Well, what book are you reading?" He says, "Well, I'm reading the book of Revelation." And Vernon Grounds thought to himself, well, you know, he probably doesn't understand what he's reading very well, so I'll kind of talk to him about it. And he said, "Well, have you been reading the book?" He says, "Well, what's it about?" And the man looked at him. He says, "Well, I've been reading through the book, and basically this book tells us that Jesus wins." And now that really is the summary, if you will, that Jesus wins. He's coming back to rule and to reign. Another thing about the background of the book, we could talk about this in a lot of detail. There are a lot of books that go into this, but the occasion of the book or the background of it historically. There's two things we need to really understand as we read the book of Revelation, and that is that there were things going on outside the churches and there are things going on inside the churches. This book, Revelation, is written to seven churches, seven literal churches in Asia Minor of that day, the western part of modern-day Turkey. We'll look at those churches in chapters 2 and 3. But on the outside of these churches, there was some local intermittent persecution. A lot of people have the idea that the churches in Asia at that time were undergoing serious, just fierce opposition and persecution. That's not necessarily true. We know the church of Smyrna, they were being persecuted. We know that a man named Antipas at the church at Pergamum had died. We know there was some persecution primarily from Jews in the church of Philadelphia. So we know there was some persecution on the outside, but it seems to have been local kind of intermittent persecution. It wasn't just ongoing, dominating persecution, but it was still there. And inside the churches, though, what we see is some apathy beginning to develop, like the church at Ephesus. They left their first love. Like the church of Laodicea that was lukewarm. But we also see apostasy had begun to creep in, like the church at Pergamum, the church at Thyatira. So on the outside, local intermittent persecution. On the inside, there's apathy, and there's some growing apostasy within these churches. The ruler at the time Revelation was written, and we'll talk about the date of the book in our next session, but I believe the ruler when it was written was Domitian. Domitian ruled from 81 A.D. to 96 A.D. When John wrote the book of Revelation. But he was called our Lord and our God. Domitian was one who was deified. And these are some of the ruins you can see in this slide of the temple of Domitian over in the city of Ephesus that was built for this emperor. And you can see here's a coin with his name on it. He was the Caesar during the time the book of Revelation was written. Here's an altar to Domitian in the Ephesus Museum. Inside of the museum there at Ephesus, there are a lot of artifacts. Some of them relate to the time of Domitian. One of the things I think is interesting, though, this is inside the Domitian temple in Ephesus, there was a colossus there, or a great statue of Domitian. And that's the head there of the statue and the left forearm. And to give a little bit more of the scale, you can see how large that head was in the forearm. This was on a great altar and a great platform there inside of this temple. So you can see Domitian was a man who believed he was God and wanted to be worshipped of God as God. And some of the things in the book of Revelation that are said about Jesus, for instance, in chapter 1, are kind of a polemic, really, or a contrast of Jesus with Domitian. Domitian claims to be God. Jesus is the true God, the true ruler of the kings of the earth. So a little bit about Domitian and the background there of the book in this way. Now, one of the most important things when we study a book of the Bible is for us to have a grasp of the purpose of the book. Why was this book written? And this is something that is emphasized a lot for me as I teach books of the Bible at our at the church that I pastor at Faith Bible Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, but also in the courses I teach at Dallas Seminary. One of the things that we've developed the idea is what's called the argument of a book. And the argument of a book is you develop the purpose for the book. And then what you do is you trace that purpose throughout the rest of the book. And so you develop what's called the argument or the flow of the book. And one of the key things to that is to develop a purpose statement for it. And you trace the other elements within the book and relate them back to that purpose. And that's why I think a lot of times we get lost when we study books of the Bible, because we don't have a purpose in mind when we begin to study it. Why was this written? Obviously, the human author had a purpose in mind when they sat down to write the book, but also the divine author, the Holy Spirit, had a purpose in mind. And the purpose statement that I have for the book of Revelation, and I've thought about this long and hard over the years, and I've had several different purpose statements at different times, but this is the one now that for me captures the meaning of the book. The book of Revelation, is the purpose of it is to give believers the advanced history. So advanced history would be prophecy, right? That's what prophecy is. It's history in advance. So it's to give the advanced history of how Jesus Christ, through judgment, becomes king, with a view toward calling them to faithfulness and to godliness. So to kind of take this apart a little bit, again, the book of Revelation calls itself, at the beginning of the book and the end, it calls itself a prophecy. And prophecy is history given in advance. So it's the advanced history of how Jesus Christ becomes king. So it's moving us, the whole book is, to this moment in Revelation chapter 19 and chapter 20, when Jesus Christ returns from heaven as the conquering king. And in chapter 20, when he sets up his kingdom on the earth, the messianic kingdom, then goes on in chapter 21 and 22 to reign forever. So it's telling us how Christ becomes king. And even here in chapter 1, verse 7, he's coming with the clouds, every eye will see him, even those who pierced him, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn over him. So it's talking about Christ becoming king. But here's the thing we can't forget. Jesus is going to become king in this book. It's giving the advanced history of how he comes to take back and take control of planet earth and become king. But it's through judgment that that happens. We have the seal judgments in chapter 6. We have the trumpet judgments in chapter 8 and 9. We have the bowl judgments in chapter 16. So it's through judgment that Jesus Christ is ultimately going to become king and come back and take control of this world. And that's why when we study the book of Revelation, there's a lot of judgment in the book of Revelation. And people will often say, well, boy, the book of Revelation is kind of depressing. I mean, there's so much judgment in the book. You know, you kind of must be kind of a pessimist or something. Well, look, I'm the ultimate optimist. Jesus Christ is coming back to rule and reign as king. That's what the book of Revelation is about. But it tells us that in order for him to become king, this world is going to have to be judged. This world's going to have to go through a terrible time of judgment. When that judgment has ended, Jesus Christ will come back and rule and reign as king. And all of this then is with a view toward calling them, the people he wrote to originally, and us to faithfulness and godliness. So again, it's to give believers the advanced history of how Jesus Christ, through judgment, becomes king, with a view towards calling them, the original audience, and us to faithfulness and to godliness. To me, prophecy is not a depressant, it's a stimulant. It should be a stimulant to us to godly living, to living our lives for the Lord. Remember in 1 John, also written by the Apostle John, it tells us that everyone who fixes his hope on him, that is on Jesus Christ, purifies himself, even as he himself is pure. So Bible prophecy is given to us as a purifying hope to stimulate us to live lives that are pleasing to the Lord. Now, one other thing I want to mention here, kind of as background, this is important, is there are two patterns in the book of Revelation that help us understand the book. One of the patterns, we're going to point this out as we go along, is that the book alternates between heaven and earth. You start out in chapter 1, and it's a vision that John sees on the earth of the resurrected Christ. And then chapters 2 and 3 are on the earth also, where the seven churches are addressed. But then you go to chapter 4, and chapter 4 and 5, we're going to take a trip to heaven, to the throne room of God in heaven. Then in chapter 6, we're going to come back down to the earth again. And so it's going to alternate the rest of the book between earth and between heaven. One of the things that's important about that is it's telling us with this alternating pattern that's what is happening on the earth is being controlled by God in heaven. So we're going to see what's happened on the earth, and then we're going to take a trip back to heaven to God's throne to see that God is in control of what's happening. Then we come back to the earth again, then back to heaven. So there's this alternating pattern we'll see through the book. The second thing that helps us understand this book is the chronology of the book, at least my understanding of it is, the chronology flows in the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. Chapter 6, there's the seal judgments. Chapter 7 and 8, there's the trumpet judgments. And chapter 16, there are the bowl judgments. But what we have, those move the action, but between those, we have what we might call pauses or intermissions or interludes to fill in more details. So the seals, the trumpets, and the bowls move the action towards the coming of Christ, but we have these pauses or interludes or intermissions in between. It's kind of like someone has likened this to a telephone conversation between two people. Revelation chapter 6 starts telling the story, but before long there's an interruption to fill in some information in chapter 7. The order then resumes in chapter 8 and 9 with the trumpets, then there's more fill-in in chapters 10 through 15. Then the progression returns in chapter 16 with more fill-in kind of in chapter 17 and 18, and then you have the second coming of Jesus in chapter 19. Now these interludes or intermissions or this fill-in sometimes runs ahead of the story, like in chapter 14, to tell you some things that are coming. But most of the time, these interludes back up and emphasize or fill in some key information that has been going on while the seals and the trumpets and the bowls have been poured out. So very important to see these two patterns, alternating between heaven and earth, interludes, intermissions, some pauses that fill in details and information. We'll talk about that more as we go along through the study. And then one final thing to kind of get an overview of the book is the outline of the book of Revelation. I believe in chapter 1 and verse 19, we have an inspired outline of the book for us. Chapter 1, verse 19, John is told, "Write therefore the things which you have seen, and the things which are, and the things which shall take place after these things." So John is told, write the things you've just seen. Well, what has John just seen in chapter 1? He's seen the vision of the radiant resurrected Christ. So he writes that down. That's chapter 1, verses 1 through 20. Then he says, write the things that are. I believe that's chapters 2 and 3, which is the letters to the seven churches. And then he says, write the things that will be after these things. When you get over to chapter 4 and verse 1 of Revelation, the verse starts with the word after these things, and it ends with the words after these things. So chapter 4 and following is telling us what's going to happen after these things. So I see chapter 1 as talking about the Christ, chapter 2 and 3 is talking about the churches, and chapters 4 through 22, the focus there is on what we might call the consummation. So in chapter 1, you have past things. And chapter 2 and 3, you have present things. And in chapters 4 through 22, you have prophetic things. So that's an overview or outline of the book here to help us to understand what's coming. Now, what we want to do next time is talk about one of the most important issues in the book of Revelation. And that is, what time period is this book dealing with? When are the events in Revelation fulfilled? Do they happen in the past? Have they already happened? Are they happening now? Is this talking about the future or the end times? When are these events going to occur? There are four main views about the timing of the fulfillment of the events in the book of Revelation. And I want to pick up next time looking at that so we can understand as we launch really into our study and the details of this book, understand what are we talking about? What time period is the book of Revelation dealing with? So the book of Revelation is going to give us the advanced history of how Jesus Christ, by means of judgment, becomes king, with a view towards producing faithfulness and godliness in our lives. And that's my prayer as we embark on this study together, that that's what the book of Revelation will do for us. It'll spark within us, ignite within us, a desire to live for our King until He comes.